Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. Today is Sunday, August 4th, 2024, and my name is Melanie C., a recovered compulsive overeater calling in from Canby, Oregon. The share ID numbers for Friday, August 2nd, 2024, are the following: 21625 for the 7 a.m. meeting, and 21626 for the 10 a.m. meeting. This morning, A Vision for You presents. Hang on just one second. For some reason, I lost that page. Such a lovely, humbling experience, isn't it? The title today is From My Way to God's Way. My apologies for not having that handy. Well, interestingly enough, I happen to have a starting for this particular meeting, and this is extremely humbling because I printed out the wrong one. I printed out one from several months ago, and that's not the one that I wrote yesterday. So what I'm going to do is just wing it a little bit here. I'm going to take the grace of God and talk about how important it is in this particular room to be able to speak about and pray about and dedicate our lives to a surrendered way of living through the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous, to find the grace and the glory of God to carry us through. Each and every day that we do this particular program, we come closer and closer to the idea of how and why we need a power greater than ourselves to recover from this horrendous, torturous disease of compulsive overeating. You know, when we first come in here, it's not our idea to be able to surrender our lives to anyone. We're so involved in the control and the consistent grab on the life preserver of eating food that we can't imagine living life without it. It is so horrendous and so torturous that some of us take this to a long, long way before we ever get ourselves senses enough to be able to come into these rooms and study this particular program of recovery. Myself, I was almost 50 years old, 18, 19 years ago, when this particular thing finally, I was able to pull up the white flag and cry uncle. Today, our speaker is going to speak about what it was like living life her way and how it is like now to finally live God's way. We each one of us will come in here and find a God of our own understanding and live a way that we can live free from the bondage of ourselves. It is an absolute miracle. And the beauty of it is you get to describe your own higher power. I like to call it a power other than myself. And we get to describe it, define it, and utilize it in the way that seems right for us. It doesn't have to be one of religion, of course, because we don't affiliate with anything of that particular nature. It can be whatever you want it to be. Many people have all kinds of interpretations. We just need something that's greater than us, greater than the pull that we have, the fear that we have, to pull us up out of that food into a real sense of what this disease really is, which is a disease of the mind. We're so grateful to be able to have an example of that today, a strong, wonderful example of that today. This morning, Dawn B. from California will tell her story about what it was like, what happened, and what it is like now. She will be able to come up and visit with you about the torture, about the torment, about how come it was that the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous made a difference for her, and what this huge place of spiritual living through the power of a God greater than her is doing for her life. She hails from the wonderful, beautiful state of California. She is a absolute mainstay of service here at A Vision for You. You'll find her most likely on the 10 o'clock meeting each and every week, giving of her service. She's also tremendously dedicated to the still suffering compulsive overeater in a variety of large ways. If you would, please come together here and welcome to the line this morning, Dawn B. from California.
Oh, thank you so much, Melanie. That was a beautiful, beautiful introduction. It was just perfect. It's so great to be here with all of you today. I am just very excited to have this opportunity. And I would just like to start with a word of prayer, asking God to just be present. So, God, I just offer this whole time to you and ask for your will to be done, not mine. Please give me the words. Speak through me. May your message, whatever you want to be said here today, God, may that be said. And just use this time to get across to those who are still suffering, Lord. Just speak through me, and may your will be done, not mine. May your will, your words be spoken, not mine. And I surrender the fear that I have and just ask God, please, to remove my fear and direct my attention to what you would have me be. And when I ponder what God would have me be, I think God would have me just be relaxed and calm, present in the moment, and just giving thanks for this opportunity. Amen. Thank you so much. My name is Dawn B., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Southern California. I am so grateful to be here. I started in Overeaters Anonymous back in the late 1970s. I came in, I believe, when I was age 19. I was thinking it was 18, but I do believe it was age 19 when I came in, and I'm 65 years old now. When I came in, I was overweight, you know, not obese yet, but overweight, and just really having a problem with food. Stealing food from my employer. I was in college at the time, and they'd given me various jobs, and I was stealing food. I was not doing what I needed to be doing on the jobs that they gave me to help pay for my school. They'd give me like student employment. And it was really affecting my life. I would, and they would move me from job to job. And I think it was because, you know, I was stealing from the snack bar where I worked, from the kitchen where I worked. And then they moved me out to probably be, out away from the food. So I would be working with the athletic program. I'm just not proud of that. The amazing lengths that this disease will take us is amazing. So I started very early. And at one point, I got up to probably 250 pounds. I really don't know how much weight I gained. I'm 5'6", and I'm now, all thanks be to God, maintaining 120, 125 pound weight loss, all thanks be to God, and that is an absolute miracle. I've been in the program now for, over 40 years, and it has been a beautiful journey. I am one of the slowest learners you'll ever come across. It took me 34 years in the rooms to be able to become abstinent for any length of period of time. So if you've been in the room for a long time and you haven't gotten abstinent, there is a miracle here with your name on it. And there certainly was one with my name on it. And if it can happen for me, it can happen for you. So after 34 years of failure, half measures, delusional thinking, that really was my specialty. And for a number of those years, the only one who knew I was a member was me. So it was in and out of the rooms for 34 years. But I always thought I was a member, and I carried the literature that I had. When we first started out, all we had was the big book. That's what we read from. And it's a fantastic book. And I have since, since coming back to Vision, really been drawn back to the big book. And that really is such a powerful, powerful message. So was thinking about today and, you know, the title, From My Way to God's Way, and thinking about what is the most important thing that I can offer you. Well, first of all, you know, after asking God what God would have me say, I believe that the most important thing that I can offer is, you know, how it happened that after 34 years, I finally, 12 years ago, was able to become abstinent. I mean, that is just an absolute shocker that, you know, it took me decades to get there, but finally becoming abstinent. How did that happen? And, you know, how is it that I moved from my way to God's way? And it was a beautiful, beautiful, it is a beautiful journey, and it is a daily practice. So what happened is, well, I'll give you a little bit of background. First of all, I am a mother. I am a mother of four young adult children. I have three children with autism, and two of my children who do have the autism, both my sons, are of the severity that they may never be able to live on their own. One very, very severe, essentially nonverbal. He does say some things, but he, you know, it's repetitive speaking, echolalia, they call it. And then, so three with autism, and then the two that are higher functioning also have mental illness, have schizoaffective disorder. And then my youngest son is typical. So four children total and three with disabilities. My husband is a cancer survivor on a feeding tube with ongoing chronic health issues. He is, you know, in declining health. But the truth of the matter is I am living a life beyond my wildest dreams. Not because my circumstances have changed, but because my attitude about my circumstances has been transformed through the working of the steps and through my relationship with my higher power. And it's an amazing, amazing thing. I did come into this program, like I say, at age 18 or 19, and I came in, you know, really confused and baffled by this disease and just shocked and amazed that I couldn't control myself with the food. And it was running my life, and it just got progressively worse. It just got, my weight got worse, my experience got worse, and I began to even, you know, practicing bulimia at some point, but I kind of dabbled in that. I didn't stick with that. But I'm mainly just a compulsive overeater and would gain weight. I remember wearing these bib overalls, you know, and forcing myself to wear the same clothes, trying to shame myself into stopping my compulsive overeating. You know, just treating myself horribly, speaking to myself horribly like I wouldn't talk to anybody else. Telling myself horrible things when I looked in the mirror, and that didn't work. So me trying harder didn't work, but this program absolutely did work. I went into my first meeting. I was confused why they were talking about alcoholism and why we were reading the big book, but it became a life-saving message for me, transformative message. So what I like to tell people when I'm, you know, making outreach calls is that what I needed to do personally was I needed to clearly identify all of my alcoholic foods. And how I did that was I made a list of all the foods that I had overeaten on, you know, binged on, and then making a list of those foods that I sometimes overeat on and sometimes binged on, but sometimes I was okay with. And then looking at their common ingredients. And that became my list of foods that were my alcoholic foods. And those are now death to me. What happened was for, you know, why I started to become abstinent was an act of God, absolutely an act of God. And it was also me coming to the realization that this is life or death for me. I cannot continue on to just, you know, hope and pray and try harder and shame myself and kick myself and, you know, beat myself up, trying to beat myself into, you know, doing what I needed to do. It had to be an act of God. It had to be God's way coming, God doing a miracle for me that I could not do for myself. And it was a that realization that I can't anymore, but God can. And it was a dark time before I was able to get abstinent, and when I was becoming abstinent, it was a very dark time. And the darkness was my self-will run riot. It was me trying to force, trying to live on my way and not God's way. And I'm just pausing to help ask God to quiet my fear and just direct my attention to what God would have me be, and seeking God's help. Thank you for that moment. So what happened was when God had that miracle happen, my daughter was essentially, she had gone into a psychiatric facility. She has, like I say, two of my adult children have mental illness as well as autism. And what happened when the time that I was able to become abstinent was like the worst time, some of the worst times in my life. We had moved out of our dream home. We had moved into our nice home, and because of my fighting with the school district, my husband had developed cancer. I had that I knew of. I had two children with autism, and a third was being diagnosed. And so I was going into fighting the school district and fighting the agencies because they weren't, in my opinion, giving them the appropriate services. And because of that fighting, they decided that they were going to take us to court, to federal court, and that would be more years of fighting. And I, from this message of the big book slowly percolating in my mind through program, I realized that I needed to cease fighting everything and everyone, that I was living a life on self-will run riot, and my life was collapsing. And what we had to do was we had to move out of our dream home and move into a small, tiny, cockroach-ridden apartment in a very dark, it was a very scary part of a different town where there were a lot of gangs. And we moved into this tiny apartment because we heard that the school district there would be better. And so we moved there, and I remember being in that apartment and with all the cockroaches and looking at we had this coffee maker and had a display on there, and I couldn't even see the numbers on the display because there were, and I thought, well, coffee maker isn't working. That's why I can't see the display. The bulb must have gone out. And then I looked closer, and it was all the cockroach bodies in the display that was blocking out the numbers. And I remember picking up the toaster and dropping it on the counter. And like 50 cockroaches like scampered away and going into the bathroom. And then seeing my son there on the floor, look, mommy, I have a new pet. And he was like twirling this cockroach on the floor. And this all happened because this was all collapsing, like I say, because of my self-will run riot. That's why we were in this apartment, is because we had to move away from the toxic environment that my self-will run riot had created back in the other town with our larger home. So we put everything in storage and moved into this place, and God stepped in. And what happened was my son would want to be outside late at night, and he would be, wanting to sleep on the playground equipment and even, using the restroom there on the playground equipment. And there were gang members out there, and my son would be trying to play basketball where the gang members were. And they would go, "Oh, no, wait, no, cool. He's cool. He's cool. Let him do his thing." And so they would clear a path for him to be able to go under the basketball hoop and shoot baskets. And they were so kind. We thought we were, descending into hell, and they were so kind to us. And my son also broke up a what I think was like a quinceañera, beautiful party that they had all these decorations for. And my son with severe autism was over there. And he was grabbing their bowls of food and, stopping the party. And we had an aide working with us who started at that time. And she called me up crying and said I needed to come over because my son had broken up the party. And so I came over there. And they were so kind to us. And I said, "I am so sorry, so sorry." And he said, "No problem whatsoever. It is not a problem." And they just, ended the party at that time. There was salsa and food over all the guests. And my son was standing there with an empty bowl of this food. And the food had been, he had obviously had like this tussle with them. And, the aide was crying. But the people were so kind to us. And it was just a message of God's presence in the midst of the darkness. And I remember, in the big book where it talks about we agnostics and, we think we can. I told my sponsor at the time when we were going through we agnostics, I said, "Well, I really already have a faith, so I really don't need to probably read this chapter, or maybe I can just, go ahead and move through step two because I think I have this down. I have a faith." And she said, "Well, let's look at it as how are you acting as if you're not aware, as if God is present? How are you acting as if you're not sure if God is there? And it's all on your shoulders." And I said, "Okay, well, I guess I really qualify with that. I act like that, throughout the day. I forget that God's there, and I think I'm on my own, and I got to work this out." So anyway, as part of my husband once said that he feels like we have spiritual autism, and the spiritual autism is that my son would be in his own little world, and we would be there trying to get his attention, and he would just wouldn't be able to look at us; he would just ignore us, and. One of the things we would always do is say, "Look at me, eyes on me, sweet one." And so really try to get his attention, and he just wouldn't look at us. And my husband said he thought that we had spiritual autism because God is trying to get our attention, and we're just not aware that God is there, and God wants to have a relationship with us, and is kind of, chasing after us, looking, trying to get our attention. And that was certainly has been the case in my life. And I wanted to tell you a couple stories from, God showing up for me and trying to get my attention. One time was when my son was, we had a lot of aides that started to be able to come over to our home to work with him, 7 days a week, and my other son as well, and my daughter who also has autism, they would work with her as well. But in a meeting for my son, who's most severe, he started just working and working and working on this piece of paper. And normally, he wouldn't sit down and just really work on something. He'd bounce from one activity to the next to the next. And he just kept working. And I thought, well, that's really strange. But I didn't pay attention because we were having this meeting with the staff. And then he works on this thing for like 10 minutes, which was really odd. And he was about like, 4 years old at the time. And then what he did, which was really uncharacteristic, was then hand me this piece of paper. And I looked at it and I stopped the meeting and I said, oh, my goodness, I really feel like God really wants me to hear this. And what he had written was three squares, three different colors. And he, you know, we were teaching. He didn't know, how to write a sentence. We were teaching him words like mom, dad, and like I say, he was essentially not verbal. Anyway, he had written three squares, three different colors, and in each square was a word in capital letters. And he had written do in capital letters, not in the next square, all capital letters, worry on this sign. And I said, oh my goodness, I really feel like God wants me to hear this message. And the people were stunned. They were shocked. They had never seen him write a sentence, and he really has never since then written a complete sentence, that made sense since that time. And he's 29 now. And I'm a slow learner, like I said. I'm one of the slowest learners you'll come across. And so he went on to crank out like probably 60 of these. And so everywhere I would turn in the house, I would see these signs, do not worry, do not worry, do not worry, do not worry. And God was really getting my attention at that time. And then one other story was I was worrying late at night, pacing the hallways, just worrying about all my children and their futures. And one of the things my son wouldn't do would be looking at my eyes and smiling. It was just one of the things he just could not do. So I'm up there worrying at night, and he comes to the doorway of his room, and he looks straight at me and gives me this big grin, which I was so shocked. And he looked at me and he smiled and he started to sing. And this is, again, he's nonverbal. And he sang a song that I've never heard him sing since or before. And his little sweet voice just started to sing. And he goes, all night, all day, angels watching over me, my Lord, all night, all day, angels watching over me. And then he just gave me this big, huge grin, and he smiled, and then he went back into his room. And my jaw about dropped. And just like it says at the end of We Agnostics, who am I to say there is no God? After seeing that, I had been really angry at God for why we had autism, and then why we had autism in one child and then two and then three. And I would drive around and just scream at God and, why? And God trying to get my attention in a variety of ways. Just, I'm here for you. And just like it says in We Agnostics, I stood in the presence of infinite power and love, and I was amazed. Who am I to say there is no God? And then it does go on in We Agnostics saying, God is everything or God is nothing. And if I believe that God is everything, what is my choice to be? So if I believe God is everything, then I must believe that God is working even in this, even in this. So then we move on to, step one is obvious. I was so powerless, and I was self-will run riot. And what I learned about step one is that, this is something that I am going to need. So not only for the food am I powerless. Not only, had I ballooned up to almost 300 pounds, but 250 for sure. I stopped weighing myself, so I really don't know how much I gained. Not only could I not barely make it up a flight of stairs without huffing and puffing, but I just felt like God was giving me this message that this will kill me, this will take me out, and I am absolutely powerless over this. And I had tried for decades in the rooms to become abstinent, and it just wasn't happening. And then finally it did, and it was an act of God. It was a miracle of God. And I kind of got distracted there and got off track. But I was telling you, you know, how that, when that took place was, this is, you know, fast forward some years. And we had finally moved out of that apartment in the really scary part of town and moved into just another part of town where, in a different town where they had activities for people with disabilities. So we moved there. And my daughter was experiencing mental illness and going into a psychiatric facility. She had picked up a chair and was going to throw it at the counselor there. She was, poor thing, suffering from, like I say, mental illness. The police called, and they had strapped her to a gurney, and they were taking her to the psychiatric facility. And I had just, you know, those words coming to me from we agnostics, you know, God is everything or God is nothing. So if God is everything and in everything, then God must be working even through this. And I just had the, I just surrendered and I said, God, your will be done, not mine. Your will be done, not mine. And then when we had to go visit her, and it was in a really scary part of town, where we used to live in that small apartment, it was not far from there, but that's where the psychiatric facility was. And we went there and we thought we were descending into hell. And I just kept saying over and over, your will be done, God, not mine. Your way, not mine, God. Your will be done, not mine. And I just reached out my hand and felt I was holding on to God's hand, and God was walking me through that. And I was certainly powerless over it. And so the steps for me have been so life-changing and continue to be, because not only am I powerless over the food and my life is unmanageable, I am powerless over people, places, and things. And, you know, my life on a daily basis is unmanageable. And so how do I find strength in that? How do I find sanity in that? And it's not by trying harder. It's not by forcing my will. It is by surrendering to a power much greater than me, who wants, who loves me and delights in me and wants to get my attention and wants to have a relationship with me, who chases after me and, like I say, delights in me exactly as I am. And as it says in step three, you know, it talks about God. And that's on page 62, where it's talking about, you know, the root of my troubles are of my own making. I'm self-will run riot. Above everything, I must be rid of this selfishness. I must be rid of me thinking I know better than God how life needs to be going, and this should not be happening. And I can either stay in that point of resisting reality and saying this should not be happening, and stay in that tortured state of resisting God's way, the way of the reality is playing out, or I can relax and I can surrender and I can embrace my powerlessness, step one, and I can, in step three, or I'm sorry, and then in step two, what will restore me to sanity? Is it my logic? Is it my reason? Is it trying harder? No, there's one thing that can restore me to sanity in this area, and it is a power much greater than me that I do not understand, but that follows me around and wants to get my attention. And then it goes on to say that I have to have God's help to be rid of this selfishness, this me demanding my will be done. I have to have God's help, and this will kill me. So it, in the first part of the book, is telling me that the food will kill me. You know, this is life or death. I'm doomed. I am hopeless. And now it's telling me that my thinking will kill me as well. So it is life or death, and I needed to take it with that type of seriousness in order for me to work my program, not only with my eating, but with my thinking as well, my emotional sobriety. And so what do I need to do? And it says, first of all, I need to, on page 62, I need to quit playing God. I remember I would introduce myself in meetings, you know, hi, my name is Dawn, and I'm a recovering higher power. Because essentially that's what I was doing. You know, I was trying to play God. I was saying that I know better than God how life needs to be going. And these things, my husband's cancer, you know, my son's autism, my other son's autism, this should not be happening. And I just needed to surrender all of that and just stop thinking that I know better than God how life needs to be going. And I needed to, just like it says in here, God is going to be my director. So now I get to focus on, I am no longer going to be coming into this show of life, this play that's playing out, you know, on stage and thinking that I know the way the storyline is supposed to go, because I don't. And in fact, this storyline might be all playing out for my highest learning and growth. And I get to trust that God is in charge. God has a plan. God has the storyline. And not only that, but I'm going to be given my lines. I'm going to be given the words to say, just like God is giving me the words to say now in the special edition. God is going to be, when I'm confused, I can pause just like I did in the special edition and ask God for, what is my line? What would you have me say, God? How would you have me act? What would you have me do? And we are assured here, here in the big book, that God is our director. God knows what needs to happen next. And I can just relax and ask God when I'm confused, what would you have me say here, God? How would you have me act? And then it goes on and says, God is the principal, we are his agent. So what does that mean? Well, the principal is from the financial, it's a financial district term from Bill W. The principal and the agent's legal responsibility is to work for whatever the principal's goals are. You know, so the agent is supposed to be working for whatever is the principal's best interest. So if God is the principal, I'm supposed to be working for whatever God's goals are. That's supposed to be, and the agent is legally bound to be working towards whatever the principal's goals are. So I'm supposed to be legally, that's supposed to be my legal obligation, is to work for whatever God's goals are. What are your goals, God? So God is the Father, we are his children. So with that relationship, and they're talking about the perfect parent here. So God is the Father, I am his child. So I can trust that there's nothing more important to my higher power than meeting my deepest needs with divine abundance. God is my perfect parent. So think of God as my perfect mother or father, who delights in me, who can't take his, loves me so much he can't take his eyes off of me, who, there's nothing more important to God than assuring me that I am safe, I am loved, I am delighted in, and I am so well cared for. God really wants, that's a huge priority for God. And also, God is my biggest cheerleader. God's cheering me on. God believes in me. God wants the very best for me, wants my highest learning and growth. There's nothing more important to God. So I can think about all these things when I am learning about my relationship with my higher power. And these, and most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. So this concept is, the keystone is the main stone at the top of the arch. It's usually wedge-shaped. And the whole success of this arch is pressing in on this keystone. And the keystone, if it's not a solid keystone, then the whole arch will fail. And so this concept of God being my director, my principal, my father, my perfect parent who delights in me, and loves me more than I can begin to comprehend with my mind, this is the the key point of this new and triumphant arch through which I pass to freedom. And freedom is a very powerful word here. And, you know, Bill W., having served in the military, it's a very precious, precious word to him as well. So I have a new employer. You know, that's how I can think about God, too. So now how this gives me strength through my daily life is thinking that I have a new employer. So I can look to God for my priorities during the day. I'm not on my own. I don't need to, again, with the spiritual autism, you know, I sometimes get distracted and think that my priority list is all there is and all that I need to pay attention to. No, it really is God's priority list. We have an aide that works in our home that was sitting at the table and really not doing their job, used to drive me absolutely nuts. And I would do 10 steps on this. And, you know, because, and that through, I realized through doing the 10 step that aide is exactly the way I act at times. That aide is me. I found that through a 10 step. I'm acting in that way when I forget that I'm employed. I forget I have an employer who is, you know, has priorities for me throughout the day, and I'm ignoring those priorities and just sitting at the table and, you know, getting lost in my phone or doing my own thing, and how God is there for me. So I can turn to my new employer who is going to provide me with everything that I need. So if you're just starting out in this program, if it is God's most loving will for you to put down the food and not to pick up your alcoholic foods, then you have a new employer. You're going to be given all that you need to be able to do that. So you're no longer relying on your shaky abilities. You're relying on the creator of the universe's abilities. And what a beautiful thing that is. And again, to the newcomer as well, I remember, you know, putting down the food. It is hell in the beginning to put down the food, but it's the shortest amount of hell. If I stay the course and don't pick up my alcoholic foods, it's the shortest amount of hell. And it's hell for a purpose. It's suffering for a purpose. But if I do pick up the food, then the rest of my life is hell. It really is. And I don't believe that infinite love, infinite power, my higher power wants me to live my life in hell and suffering, lost in the food, you know, hating myself. I don't believe that's God's most loving will for me. And whatever is most loving, I believe that's God's will for me. And my new employer loves me beyond what I can begin to comprehend with my mind, and wants what is most loving for me. So I have this new employer who's going to equip me for everything that I need. Do you know how comforting that is for me to go? For all of us to be able to go through our day and to know that we're going to be given everything that we need. Any good employer is never going to send out their employee without equipping them with everything that they need to be able to do that well exactly as the employer would delight in it being done. So I don't have to worry. I do not have to worry. I'm going to be given everything that I need. And those are the messages that I clung to in the most challenging times of my life, and I still cling to. I'm going to be given everything I need. When my daughter was, like I say, being taken into the psychiatric ward, she was in there she was out of our home in the psychiatric ward for 7 months. They couldn't find a medication that worked with her. You know, we thought it was descending into hell. And what happened was God showed up. And the people who worked there were like angels for her. They found a medication that worked for her. And she started to get better. And God was there in the workers. God showed up. And I was just, again, reaching out with my hand and, you know, thinking of visualizing my God just holding on to my hand and helping me. And I would repeat over and over as I was visiting her in the psychiatric ward, I would just say, "Your will be done, not mine. Your will be done, not mine. Your way, not mine, God. Your way, not mine." And that gave me so much strength to be able to get through that. And I was also, you know, reaching out. We, in our weakest, most, you know, challenging times, we also have a beautiful fellowship. All these angels, you know, around us, our fellows, God with skin on. We can reach out to them. And I did. And I called when I felt very, very alone. And they assured me and reminded me, "You are not alone, sweetheart. God is right there with you, holding on to your hand. You are not alone." And the most wonderful thing that I can do to say thank you for all the fellows that have given me, you know, been God with skin on for me, is to pass this message on to you this morning. This is my saying thank you. So then it moves on to this beautiful paragraph where it's talking what happens to us when we are living in, you know, this new way, looking to God for our guidance, looking to God for our priority list. When we are trusting that God is our perfect parent who delights in us and loves us beyond what we can begin to comprehend in our mind, how do our lives look? And it says, established on such a footing, on page 63 there in the big book, and footing is a architectural term. And the footing is what, it's a level surface that goes in before the foundation of the building. And so it's super important. Established on such a footing, we become less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. And more we become interested in seeing what we can contribute to life. We feel new power flow in, and I enjoy peace of mind. So, this is a beautiful way of life and essentially telling me how I can experience peace of mind and power flowing in, and regardless of circumstances. And this is the foundation. This can be the foundation of my life and how I can go through each and every moment with this secure foundation of God's way, not my way. As we discover, we can face life successfully. And this isn't face life successfully because everything is going the way we think it needs to go. This is face life successfully regardless of what's happening. And that gives me so much peace. I can face life successfully. I can become conscious of God's presence. And then we begin to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and hereafter. We are reborn. Beautiful, beautiful words. And then it goes on to step three. And step three is, you know, move that movement from my way, self will run riot, to God's way. And here it says, "God, I offer myself to thee." And I say this prayer, you know, during the day, and it is just a beautiful thing. I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. So I visualize myself here just being offered to God like building material. God is the architect. I don't have any idea what God is building. And you know what? I don't need to know. I just place myself into God's hand and just ask, do whatever you want. And not only with myself, but I place the situation. So I place my children, my husband, into God's hands and say, whatever your will is, God, I'm on board. Do with it as you want. I surrender, God. Your will be done, not mine. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. And that bondage to self for me is that self-will, that self-centeredness, the bondage. And the word relieve here is a special word. To me, I imagine Bill W., you know, as having that military background. He chose the word relieve. So to me, that speaks to me of a soldier being relieved of duty. So I can stand down. It's like this prayer is inviting me to stand down, soldier. Stand down, Donnie, from my hypervigilance, my thinking I need to run everything myself, from my trying harder, thinking that will provide me sanity, when in step two, we're assured that no, you know, only a a power much greater than me. That is the source of my sanity. So stand down, Donnie. You know, you don't need to be enslaved, in bondage to self. So relieve me, stand down, soldier. Relieve me of the bondage of self, me thinking that I must do it on my own. It's all on my shoulders. I have to get this worked out, or I know better than God how life needs to be going, and this should not be happening. That's torturous to live that way, to be resisting reality and resisting God's way, you know, forcing my way. That's a bondage. That's an enslavement. That's like being chained to a wall in a cell. So relieve me of that bondage of self, that I may better do what? That I may better do thy will, God's way. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. And we think well before taking this, and when making sure we are ready, that we can at last abandon ourselves utterly to God. And I just love the statement, abandon myself utterly to God. May I just abandon myself utterly to you, God. It's a wonderful thing to say when I'm, you know, out walking. I'll just say, I abandon myself utterly to you. I abandon myself utterly to you. I just put myself into your arms, God, and say, whatever your will is, I accept it, I welcome it, and I say thank you. May your will be done, not mine, God. Your will be done, not mine. And this way of life has gotten me through the most challenging times in my life, when I have literally, you know, been powerless, and I have reached out and looked for God's presence, for God to restore me to sanity, seeing God as the source of my sanity, my security, and all that I need. And then in step three, you know, moving from my way to God's way and just putting everything in God's hands and saying, whatever it is, God, your will be done, not mine. This also got me through, you know, my husband's declining health continues to get me through that, to where, you know, there's been points when I'm like, you know, should I call 911? You know, what is my husband going to make it through the night? Is he not? At one point, we were very concerned, you know, about his health. And at that moment, I just said, God, if it's your will that he not make it through the night, whatever your will is, God, I accept it, I welcome it, and I say thank you. May your will be done, not mine. Your will be done, not mine, God. And I just place this whole situation into your hands and ask for your way, not mine. Your will, not mine. And then when I do that, I can just feel this release, this sense of peace. And I just trust that whatever God's will is, that is, and I make that my only goal. And then I can be... I can experience this peace, and I can be of service rather than resisting reality and fighting reality. I can be just relaxed and asking for God's will, not mine. This also got me through my father's death. My father was, you know, like this. He was my hero. He was, you know, one of my biggest cheerleaders growing up. And I thought I would not be able to make it through his death. I thought I would not be able to handle it. And I prepared myself for, like, you know, decades preparing for that. And when that happened, it was an amazing, beautiful experience of just surrender. Because of program, it was surrender. You know, I am powerless over this. And I just put this into your hands, God, and I ask for your will to be done, not mine. And when they put him on hospice, I was able to fly back and be there with my mother. And, you know, it was the last thing that I wanted. But I, because of program teaching me the way of peace, the way of surrender, and placing things in God's hand and just asking for God's will to be my only goal, that is what I practiced. And I just... said, God, you know, this is, whatever your will is, I accept it. I welcome it. And I say thank you. May your will be done, not mine. I just turn this whole event over to you. And I experienced this amazing, amazing peace. And I asked my father, you know, he was going in and out of consciousness, so this wasn't like an actual thing that he said to me, but I asked him, I prayed and said, you know, is there anything you can tell me about heaven? Is there anything that you can let me know? Because I had heard that, you know, when people, when they were dying, that they would kind of go in and out of heaven, you know, in and out of the life hereafter. And I just felt so strongly that the message was communicated to me. If you only knew Donnie, my dad called me Donnie. I feel like my higher power calls me Donnie too. If you only knew Donnie, how much you are loved and your precious family is loved, Donnie, by God, you would never worry again. You would not be afraid. All is well. All is well. And I felt like that was the message that, you know, was communicated to me about heaven. And that gives me a lot of strength. And so to each of us here today, I'm going to end with, you know, we really have a beautiful program here that teaches us not only are we powerless over food and but we're powerless, at least for myself. You know, I am powerless, and I can just place all these things. I can surrender. I can place all these things into God's hand and just keep my eyes, you know, eyes on me, keep my eyes on God, and look to God for the source of my sanity. And then I can, in step three, just surrender it all to God. Not my way, but your way, God. And whatever your will is, God, even if it's the last thing that I want, whatever your will is, I accept it, I welcome it, and I say thank you. May your will be done, not mine, God. Your will be done, not mine. And it's a beautiful way of life, and I'm so grateful for this program, and it truly is life-saving. So thank you so much, and I'm going to pass with that.
Oh, Dawn, that was so riveting, a heart-changing account of your trudging this road of happy destiny. Thank you for outlining the pathway to God with the open vulnerability that you display here today to see the way to the light of recovery from this horrendous disease of self. Thank you so much. We will ask Dawn V for her contact information at the conclusion of this meeting, so please stay tuned for that and listen for that. That'll be after the recording has stopped. The share ID number for today, Sunday, August 4th, 2024, is 21627, 21,627. So the lines are now open for questions. If you have a question for Dawn, please unmute your phone by pressing *1 on your phone keypad. Offer your first name, the first letter of your last name, and your state. And then immediately upon asking your question, would you please press *1 again to mute your phone? Who would like to ask a question this morning?
Mary Lee R.
Jennifer
K. Michigan.
Somebody
Andrew,
say from Michigan.
Oklahoma.
Who's from Michigan? Who's from Michigan?
Erin Kay from Michigan.
Erin Kay from Michigan. Okay, thank you. And then somebody else. Jen T.
Tammy Kay.
Is it
Andrea,
Tammy Kay?
Oklahoma.
Tammy Kay from Florida.
Okay, thanks, Tammy. And Andrea from Oklahoma. Okay.
And Andrea, Oklahoma.
Gotcha, thank you. Our minds all clear here? Everyone that wants to ask a question for this round?
Carrie E. from New Jersey.
I have Carrie E. from New Jersey. And who
Lauren
else?
Grace B. Lauren Grace B.
Lauren
New
Grace
Jersey.
B. Mm-hmm.
Adrian N.
Did you get Mary Lee R. in Oregon?
I did. You're the first one, yes. And I got an Adrian N. Is that different than Oklahoma? Because I do have Adria. We'll see. Okay. We may not get through everybody. There's 6:30 Pacific time.
Yes, it is two
minutes.
Different people. Andrea
okay.
M. Oklahoma. A-N-D-R-E-A.
Thank
you.
Did you get Felicia S?
Anyway, I think that we're going to have a full lineup with these questions, and if not, we'll open it up again to see who else we can fit into this 30-minute time frame. Well, it's actually about 25 or so. So I have Mary Lee R., Judith, Aaron, Jen, Tammy, Andrea, Carrie, and Lauren Gray. Let's start with that lineup first. And Mary Lee R., you have the first question for this morning. Everyone else want to press a quick star one?
Thank you, Melanie, and thank you, Dawn, and good morning, everyone. Oh, my heart is just so on surrendering, Dawn. I just have heard so many surrenders. What happens after you surrender? How do you hear, or how do you know that the message that your higher power is giving you? Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Mary Lee R. That was a beautiful question. One thing that I started to practice early on was two-way prayer. And I know that Bill W. and Dr. Bob and Ann Smith, Dr. Bob's wife, would practice, you know, this two-way prayer where you practice a quiet time where you're listening for God, and then they would ask God, you know, questions, that type of thing, and then, you know, write down anything that came to them. I started practicing that early on, even before I knew how to do a 10th step. I would start, and my version of it was I would, just pour out my heart to God. So write a letter to God and just pour out my heart. So I would write a list of all that I was afraid of, all that I was worried about, and just, you know, write it all down. And then I would go back on that list, you know, my Dear God letter, and then I would cross off each of those things as I just visualized myself turning it over to God. And so I'd cross it off, and I'd visualize myself just surrendering that thing, putting that in God's hands. And when I got to the bottom of the list, then I would say to myself, okay, if God were to speak to me regarding these issues, what might God say? And I would just open myself up and just listen and write down anything that came to me. And even if it sounded silly, even if it sounded, you know, too loving, or, you know, I would just practice sitting in the presence of infinite love, infinite power, just like it says in the big book in We Agnostics. You know, we were in the presence of infinite love and infinite power. What would infinite love say to me after hearing, you know, what all my worries and cares are? What might God say to me? And then just write down anything that came to me. That right there was the most, that helped me so much grow in my conscious connection with God. And now to this day, I continue that in my 10th steps. I do practice essentially on a daily basis, doing a 10th step on a daily basis. I do practice that. And so in my 10th steps as well, you know, after I say the prayer, God, please remove my fear and direct my attention to what you would have me be, I then ask myself, okay, if God were to speak directly to me regarding this issue, what might God say? And just write down anything that God might say to me. And beautiful, amazing, love letters from God to me have just poured out onto the paper. And sometimes it's just a few words, you know, and when we start out, it might be like one word or three words. And don't be discouraged. Just, it's like a muscle. You keep practicing it. But that for me has been such a beautiful way of listening for God and hearing God speak to my heart, and that conscious, enhancing that conscious contact and knowing, you know, God's, what God wants to say to me. So thank you for that question.
Thank you so much, Mary Lee R. from Oregon, for your question. Judith, you're up next with your question. Oh, thank you, Melanie, for all you do, and everyone for being here. And Dawn, thank you so much. My name is Judith S.P., gratefully recovered. Thank you, God, in Maryland. There was so much in your share, so many little diamonds. I resonated with spiritually autistic. The examples you gave of the limitations with several of your children were spiritual teachers in that same experience in my life. My question is, I struggle often with living in the third dimension, which includes expectations and judgments. And when you talked about leaving your dream home to the apartment with cockroaches, you couldn't even see the display on the coffee maker. And let me see, I'm sorry, that one got me caught up. Oh, and moving into the neighborhood, quote unquote, with gangs. And those people were so open and loving. Stereotypically, maybe it's my New York way of living, but cockroaches.
Excuse me,
gangs.
Just 1 second, Judith, would you be able to formulate a question for Dawn this morning with what you're sharing here? Thank you so much.
Sure. The question is, how do you move from labels and judgments in the moment based on history or current experience to trusting 100% God?
Oh, thank you, Judith. That's a lovely question. For me, it has been, I expected the worst. And I expected the worst moving into that neighborhood. But what I was experiencing then in just being open-hearted and in, it says, in the third step, we're invited to see God as our director. So God is the one running the show. God is the one determining the storyline and giving the roles to different people. And we're here to play the role God assigns. So if I can just stay in my role and for me personally, and then just be open-hearted and wanting God's way, just experiencing that event and experiencing those people, they were so kind to us. I have expectations, I have preconceived ideas of how people are going to be, but moving, it just like it says in the big book, acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. And just looking at people with open hearts and accepting them as they are. And I loved what you said, Judith, about my children as my teachers. Absolutely. My children as my teacher are one of the most beautiful examples I can give you as how I move from labels to trusting God. I told myself that because my children had autism and mental illness, that their life was less valuable, that their life wasn't a success, that, and I realized through going through the steps that was my harm done that I had done to them. The harm done was I was telling myself that their life was less valuable, because they had this. But what I discovered through working my step 8 and 9 was that the harm done was my judgment, and my amends to them was a living amends, and it was asking God for God's definition of what a successful life is. And God, please teach me your definition of a successful life. So God's definition, and then I realized through doing that, and is that in God's eyes, my children are perfect. They are whole. They are successful. They are infinitely loved, and they are exactly as God delights in them being. And they are also my teachers because they teach me that I don't have to, what a successful life is. A successful life is one where you can love, you can experience love, and you can give love. And also that God delights in me. I'm infinitely loved just because I'm God's creation. I'm God's child, precious, precious child, infinitely loved. I don't need to earn that. And what I had always told myself growing up was that, you know, no, I'm not valuable unless I'm, you know, earning it, or unless I'm doing something good, or unless I'm, you know, pleasing people. And what my children have been my teachers of is, no, I'm infinitely loved and delighted in by God just by being. God delights in me and treasures me and loves me so much God can't take his eyes off me. So that they have been my teachers in that. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Judith S.P. from Maryland, for your question this morning. Aaron K., are you there? It's your turn for a question. Good morning, everybody. Aaron K., recovered compulsive overeater in Michigan. I'm just going to echo the praises and gratitude of everyone and get right to the question. So, Dawn, I was hoping you could talk about service and the role that service plays in your recovery. And I'm just thinking about, you know, you are necessarily a caregiver in your life. And so how is service and program different from service to your family, and how are they connected, and where are the challenges? And yeah, so just service. Thanks.
Oh, thank you so much, Aaron Kay. Yeah, for me, I do like to have, you know, service, I really believe, is me saying thank you. There's no way that I can say thank you to, you know, all those people who were there for me those 34 years when I was still lost in my disease. And, you know, I had a number of sponsors during that time who were there for me, even though I just wasn't ready for the program. There's no way I can adequately say thank you to them other than to, you know, pass on this program and give to people now, through sponsorship, and then also through, you know, any other service that I can provide. As a caregiver, yes, that is, you know, a responsibility, and I can now be a caregiver out of love and gratefulness rather than, you know, begrudgingly and, you know, ticked off that I have to do this anyway. And because of program, I can now give thanks and be grateful and focus on, you know, what I'm grateful for as a caregiver, and do it out of love rather than do it out of, you know, I have to do this or just checking it off my list. But I do have, you know, healthy boundaries around service and program. So I try to do my program work in the mornings and then leave my afternoons and evenings for, you know, my family, my caregiving, and is, you know, we have AIDS and other things, so I can make that possible. So thank you so much for your question.
Thank you very much, Aaron Kay from Michigan, for your question. Jen T., your question this morning, followed by Tammy Kay.
Hi, good morning, Melanie. Thank you so much for your service. This is Jen P., recovering compulsive overeater from New Jersey. And thank you so much, Dawn, for your powerful, poignant story today. I will be reviewing that again on the listening to this again. My question to you is, you mentioned the God-given ability that, you know, your creator God has given you and equipped you with. How has recovery helped you to distinguish when to use that God-given ability to advocate for your children, when, as parents, we know sometimes we do need to advocate, and when to submit? And kind of, if you could address, you said I used to be really, it was engaged in hypervigilance. And so I'm wondering too, how is it that, and you probably have answered that in so many ways already, but if you could just address how you were able to use recovery to know the distinction between when to be involved and when to relax and submit. Thank you.
That's a great question. And I really don't believe there's, you know, one answer for that. For me, it is seeking God as the source of my sanity. You know, in step two, keeping my eyes on my higher power first, and then trusting that more will be revealed. So, so I am constantly, with my children. Like right now, we're going through a reevaluation and of an agency, governmental agency, to, you know, see if my children still, from their, you know, perspective, qualify for services. So it's a constant, when do I advocate, when do I push, when do I, you know, and then when do I just surrender. And it, like I say, I don't think there's one answer there, but I do trust that whatever is most loving, that is my higher power's will. So to do all I can, but then to put it into God's hands. So, you know, fill out the forms, go through the process, and then just put it into God's hands and let it go. So I'm not on that hypervigilance, because before it just sucked all the peace out of my life. And now to be able to just let God carry it, do what I can and put it in God's hands and let God carry it. And whatever would be most loving for myself and my family and my time, and not letting it erode away from my peace of mind. So that's all I have. Thank you, Jen P.
Thank you, Jen P., for your question this morning from New Jersey. Next up is Tammy K. from Florida, followed by Andrea from Oklahoma. Hi, Tammy.
Hi, good morning. This is Tammy K. from Florida, grateful recovering sugar addict. Dawn, thank you so, so much. You just shared so many pearls of wisdom of your recovery, and you're just so honest, and I appreciate that. My question is about surrender, and when you're deep in a situation like you were, the depression and anger get to be really intense. And how do you surrender those feelings and come back with the state and give, you know, do God's will? Should I say clean your slate and do God's will?
Thank you so much, Tammy. What happened for me is when I started eating better with the food, when I put down my alcoholic foods, I started to feel so much better so quickly. I was on depression and anxiety medication for like 15 years, but when I became abstinent 12 years ago and have been abstaining now for 12 years, my peace of mind, you know, they say the, you know, garbage in, garbage out. I was stuffing myself full of refined foods, sugar, oils, you know, high fat. That really affects my mental well-being. And it just, you know, poisoned my system and my gut microbiome. And once I started filling it with healthy food, you know, whole foods, healthy foods, I started to feel 20 years younger. My brain started working better. I have been able to come off my depression and anxiety medication. I'm not recommending people come off their depression and anxiety, but for me, I was able to, just because of the abstaining, and what a miracle that is, you know, physically, emotionally, and spiritually, because the crap that I was eating really affected my depression, my anger. And then the steps being so life-changing as well, to where I can go with my depression, I can go with my anger and do a 10th step. And that's what I do. I still feel the feelings, but I just recover so much more quickly because I'm doing a 10th step to get rid of it right away, as soon as possible. So that's how I deal with it. And then I am amazed at the miraculous nature of a 10th step. I can go from being anxious and angry and do a 10th step, and it's just like, and then I'm listening for God in that 10th step, and I'm opening my heart to God to hear what God has to say and God's perspective, and, you know, making a note of that, and then it's just a beautiful, miraculous thing. So opening my heart to God through this working of the steps has really saved me. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Tammy K. from Florida. Andrea from Oklahoma, your question, please. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning. I am profoundly moved. My question is, Don, if you were to be able to speak with what you know now to your younger self, what would you say in a way that she could hear you?
Oh, that's a beautiful question. Thank you so much, Andrea. Oh, man. Yeah. I would say, sweet Donnie, you don't need to be afraid. There is a power so much greater than you, sweet one. You don't need to be doing this on your own, precious Donnie. You know, you're trying so hard, and sweet one, there is a power much greater than you that loves you beyond what you can begin to comprehend with your mind, sweet one. And you don't see it now, but that power is there for you, is always there for you, loving you, wanting to get your attention, and wanting to hold you just like a sweet little precious baby and let you know that you are loved, you are safe. All is going to be well, sweet one, regardless of what it looks like right now. And just trust this program. Just go through the steps, put down the food, do whatever it takes to put down that food. It is death to you, and it is killing you. And you're going to be losing opportunities to, be able to make decisions for your health and well-being. The writing is on the wall. This is life or death, sweet Donnie. You do need to put down the food and work this program like your life depends on it, because it absolutely does. Not only your physical health, but your emotional sobriety as well. And there is a power much greater than you that's going to hold your hand and walk you through this. And miracles will happen, sweet one. You don't need to be afraid. Thank you, Andrea.
Yes, thank you, Andrea from Oklahoma, for your question. Carrie E. from New York, your question, please. That'll be followed by Lauren Grace. Carrie,
hello.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you so much. So I wanted to know, my family also deals with mental illness and autism, and I wanted to know if when you got recovered, if your children responded differently to you? Like, did you see a change in them reflecting how you were different, if that makes sense?
Yeah. Did you say your name was Carrie?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Carrie. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it does say in the big book, our magic magnifying minds, you know, what we focus on gets bigger. So I was able to, through this program, focus on what's good in them and see that. And so my enjoyment of them was enhanced because I was able to, through the steps, focus on, you know, how they are my teachers and see them as the perfect grade of sandpaper necessary to smooth off my rough edges. And I am, rather than trying to pick on them and try to change them so I can feel better, I'm trying to look at my behavior through the steps and seeing how I need to change. And so, yes, I felt like they blossomed and were able to feel more safe around me because I was a rager in the beginning. When I was lost in my disease, they had to walk on eggshells. And so they felt more safe around me and able to be their real selves. And my son with autism, if one of the things that we can't do is say, okay, you must go from point A to point B and you must do it right now, that would be like, lighting a powder keg. That's like, you know, setting a match to gasoline. And so having the ability to just let him be and have the time that he needs to transition if he can, and just not try to force that, me trying to force, you know, self-will run riot, yes, it just made things a lot more peaceful. And I still work this program, and I'm human. You know, I still do react, and I'm human. But this program is an absolute lifesaver for helping me to find peace, unconditional peace, you know, where because of God's, seeking God's way rather than trying to force my way, does bring a lot of peace. So thank you so much for that question.
Thank you so much, Carrie from New York. And we're going to look for Lauren Grace for a question this morning, and that will be the last question we'll be able to take this morning. Lauren Grace.
Good morning, Dawn. I'm going to text you because I just have too many words, and I know the time is short. I can't even explain how excited I was to hear you this morning and how your message touched me. I'm wondering for myself and also the people I work with, How do you help people get the message of God's unconditional, adoring love from their head to their heart? I have friends and people who know this, but they just have so much trouble getting it from their head to their heart and really believing it.
Oh, that's a lovely question. Thank you, Lauren Grace. For me, it has been the listening for God. And, you know, the letters to God, the prayer and meditation, you know, it says in step 11 that we're seeking through prayer and meditation God. We're seeking God's that conscious contact with God. So it is something that we need to work at and to feel that from our, we understand it to our hearts. It really is for me personally a practice. So it's faith and trust is a practice. It's not a one and done. So as I practice trusting God, you know, even if it's repeating things over and over, I am an infinitely loved, precious child of God. I am an infinitely loved, precious, precious child of God. You know, repeating things, and then practice sitting in infinite love, sitting in God's infinitely loving presence. What does that feel like? And what would infinite love say to me? And writing down what infinite love might respond to me, and looking at those messages that, you know, as I write that down, and then repeating those things, you know, it's just like God showing up. It's the miracle of God showing up too, you know. I got this image in my mind of God holding me as I saw my infant son, you know, swaddled in a blanket. And the message came to me, it's like, you too, Donnie, can relax like your sweet son. And he just had this peaceful look on his face, and I was holding him as an infant. You too, Donnie, can relax with this love, knowing that you are so treasured and so precious and so well cared for by God. And it's just that seeking God and listening for God and practice trusting God, that it moves slowly from the head knowledge to experiencing it. Oh, that infinite love. So it's a practice. Thank you so much, Lauren Grace.
Thank you so much, Lauren Grace, for the question. And as I was indicating, time won't allow for any more questions this morning, but be sure and take Dawn's phone number so that you can call her at a later time to offer your question at that particular point. And thank you again for coming to the Sunday Special Edition. At the break of dawn, no pun intended, with your powerful retelling of your life, for the reason and the purpose and the miracle of turning to God, a higher power of our own choosing. to transform our lives. It was absolutely riveting. So we're going to close this morning as we do in our usual fashion here at A Vision for You by reading from page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freedom to what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us who trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.